Last month, we did the ultimate Raycast deep dive, but there's a lot in there. So this week, I want to highlight just the segment from the product design team, because I find the way that they work pretty inspiring.
I think the important thing really is that it's not just design that's obsessed with craft. I would say the whole team at Raycast has a very high bar to what we ship. So when I joined Raycast, I was really impressed in how high the level of understanding for design is, even, you know, throughout the whole team, engineering, leadership, everyone. So I think it's just something that's in the culture of the whole company.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like it's a very design-minded company, and everybody's very good at what they do. We all have very different expertises, I would say. We have the trust and the freedom to just explore our own sort of like niche. Like I'll go very deep on like technical stuff and like how things work. And obviously Inga's super visual. And in a way that's all gets brought together and shines through the product and through like marketing and hype material.
So obviously like a design driven company, a lot of that's top down, kind of baked into the culture from the beginning. But how does that translate into like a normal week? You know, like what does it actually look like in practice for Raycast to care about design?
I think it starts on a Monday with a team meeting. I think we all share our work, whether it's from a design perspective, an engineer's perspective, product, founders. I think we're all sharing often and frequently with each other, and that opens up the feedback loop early on in the week. And then as we progress, we have like design digests and these weekly crits that help us sort of build on top of that and then go deeper in some of those details. And as Roy said, we all have different skill sets and expertise, and I think that allows us to always cover everyone's work with the different sort of eyes that we need.
Yeah, one interesting bit for the team meeting, like it's quite low key already, but to just share your screen, it's always a little bit too much effort if it's just a tiny thing that you want to share. So every roughly once a month or so, we as a design team open up this Figma file and dump any visual work that we've done. It could be a silly exploration, could be a new icon, could be a new wallpaper, anything basically. Then we present that as like a design digest. So that's ultra low barrier to like share something with the team. And then you don't have to say like, oh, I worked on a wallpaper, share your screen for like 5 seconds. Someone from the team then just shares the design digest, which is like slides in Figma basically, right? We just have a wallpaper slide that we just dump our things on and mark it with our name, and then walk through it. And usually most of the things don't need an explanation, so you don't need to go through the hassle of sharing your screen.
I didn't realize that was happening in a Figma file. That makes much sense, because you're right, like if you're going to share your screen, then you feel this pressure of like, well, the thing I'm about to share has to be worthy of the screen share and the gap and the logistics of doing the Zoom settings. So that's really cool, actually. Yeah.
I think what's also tricky is like our timelines from design to dev are usually pretty tight, like the way we build and iterate. So sometimes you're like, do I share this design, even though in like the engineer might already have built this and want to share it in production? So sometimes it helps just to go straight in with the production version. Even if it's slightly rough, I think it still opens up that discussion of like design quality and craft and where we can sort of quickly address that to get it to just an even better version within a day or two.
Yeah, and I think it's very key also that this meeting is on Monday, because it's a really nice start of the week to see what everyone has built recently. It's just inspiring to start your week with, you know, seeing everything that's been going on at Raycast. And throughout the week, one of the key things which I think helps with the craft is people have a lot of time meeting free to actually focus. One of Raycast's core aspects of the Raycast mission is to help people focus more, to find their flow. And I think that really shows through in the way we work, because Raycast is probably the company I've been in with the least meetings. You have so much time to focus on design, to focus on your craft, to iterate, to try a lot of different versions.
Yeah, but I think it's not the case for everyone in the company, but definitely the design team. Like we work on a couple of projects most of the time at the same time. Yeah. But meeting-wise, like my entire Tuesday, my entire Wednesday, often my half of my Thursday are like completely free.
It's the dream.
And yeah, exactly. And the Thursday morning is focused on this thing that we call the Pixel Rumble, which is this session where every designer plus the two founders basically join. And it could be anything, an exploration very early, something more polished, like you're close to releasing something and it's about like an icon for the release media or whatever, anything you could bring there. And it's just crit basically, but with the founders. And usually that's a very easy way to like unblock yourself or just get some input and feedback.
Let's go deeper on the Thursday real quick before we move on. Yeah. So like you have the Pixel Rumble, which also is amazing branding. So talk to me a little bit more about like how that works, how you as a designer prepare, what is like the ideal outcome coming from that meeting? Like, let's just go a little bit deeper in that part.
What we have is we just have a Notion doc for every Pixel Rumble where any designer can sign up to share a piece of work, whether it's a work in progress, whether it's something they've been thinking about or an idea they have or an active project. And then during the meeting, we would take turns to basically give everyone the context of this design problem that we're working on. We share our thoughts, and usually we would come in with sort of a point of view of where we want to take it, but also it's really good to have both the design team and the founders really close to the work and involved in that discussion, because you get really actionable feedback.
Yeah, it's a very low-key way of signing up for it. Like, signing up sounds quite heavy, but it's just, you know, a bullet list for every meeting, and you just put a topic and your name there, and that's all. Anyone can bring anything, basically. There's no set format. Usually, depending on what you're showing, you could provide some context of like what you want to get out of it, right? Like, maybe you're stuck, or maybe you just want to choose between two versions of something and get that type of feedback.
Usually for me, it's like I've not prepped anything and I've signed up 15 minutes before. And it's a mess of my Figma file, but I think that shows the like low effort, low level of like what you need. There's no barrier to like present slides or, you know, have rationale behind that. It's almost like, let's just jump into Figma and, you know, usually it's like five different versions that are moving around.
And it shouldn't turn into that thing where you're going to prepare for Pixel Rumble, right? You don't want to have, we don't want presentations there. Yeah. We just want the raw stuff on the ideas and unblock people or help out.
But I think we're also all guilty of maybe overthinking what we do in. It's like, oh, it's too early. Oh, it's too late. Oh, I'm not sure about this. So actually, sometimes halfway through a session, I'm like, actually, this is still early enough that I can share it. Like, there's no need to hold this back because I know I'm going to get something valuable out of it.
I like that a lot. Like, I think there's like this malady in these types of meetings, especially as a company is scaling. And so it does seem like even from the early onset, you all are really intentionally making sure that this is a safe space to share whatever, like whatever you're thinking, whatever you're working on at any stage too, which is definitely, I'm kind of underlining that for myself.
Sometimes like the smallest thing becomes like a 45-minute discussion too that you didn't expect. You're like, oh, this will be quick. And then suddenly like everyone's got an opinion, you're back and forth bouncing ideas. And then those are usually the best kinds, right? Because it's like this started off as like a small idea and suddenly you've like solved it all or got a much better picture.
Yeah, which is maybe also related to the fact that we're now multi-platform, right? With iOS and with the desktop app and at some point soon also Windows. You know, have you considered how this would work if we, I don't know, need to sync the chat from desktop to Mac? Like, there's so many complexity in there, so much complexity. Yeah, sometimes in a very early exploration, you sort of forget about that a little bit, which is also fine. I think that shouldn't restrict us of exploring things, but this could come up in like a Pixel Rumble where like a very small thing turns into like a bigger discussion. But that's like amazingly helpful.
All right, so let's keep going through the weekly pattern here. We're on Thursday. Oh. Where do we go from here?
Friday.
Surprise.
I mean, Fridays for us are Ray Days, which is a free day to almost break apart from your weekly work and to pick up anything you want to explore. Sometimes that's like a new feature idea. Sometimes it's bug fixing. Sometimes it's just enhancing another feature. But I think we all have the freedom as designers, engineers, everyone in the company to just take time to pivot and think about something else. And usually some of the features that we ship come out of those, like Raycast Focus was a Ray Day. And yeah, quite a few others too. So they then feed back into the Monday. And then you share that, and that sort of inspires something else.
I like that. Do you have to like declare what your Ray Day is going to be about?
Yeah, so there's a Slack message in the morning, right? And we just add to the thread about what we're working on. Sometimes it's hard to like pinpoint what you're going to work on. Sometimes it'll take a couple of hours going through notes, like Slack channels, the community. Maybe you find like a bug in there, and you're like, actually, I want to fix that because I've had that issue. But yeah, we just post what we're doing, and then sometimes we link up and it's like two or three people, like an engineer, a designer, also working on something that day.
Group Ray Day. Sometimes you would come into Friday with a clear idea of what you want to design. Maybe you have an idea that you wanted to explore for a while, or sometimes it's more spontaneous. You know, you wake up on Friday, you start your day, and you have an idea that you want to explore. So
Yeah, just something, you realize something is super broken. Like recently there was the pro walkthrough. So you sign up for pro and then you get this little sort of extra walkthrough of like, hey, congratulations, super cool. This is the new stuff you have access to now. And I realized that was, we just never created assets for the light mode and it looked terribly broken. You can imagine, right?
Yeah.
And for me, that was the first moment to kind of just set up the whole dev environment in Xcode and just fix it myself. Like it's too much work to go back and forth with an engineer providing assets and stuff. So it's, on the one hand, it was creating all those assets and at the same time, fixing it yourself. But that was like a perfect grade A example because I could go from start to finish in a day and just have a very demoable thing on a Monday and we ship it the next week basically.
Quick context, how much of a technical background do you all have? How often are you working in code? Are we like pretty much just in Figma? Like how does that work? And maybe we can even use that as a entry point to learn a little bit more about how you all collaborate with engineers too.
When I started my career, I was both a designer and a front-end engineer, but during my career I focused a lot more on design. So the past few years before joining Raycast, I wasn't writing code actively except for maybe a personal project, my portfolio website, etc. But when I joined Raycast, there's this culture of designers shipping. So basically everyone has access to the code base. And with new AI tools, it's so much easier to actually make a contribution. So for me, I mean, right now, I would say I spend a lot of time in Cursor, apart from Figma. And it's really great to be able to onboard yourself to the code base of the product. So personally, I would use it even in the beginning of kind of understanding how everything is structured, what lives in what file, and understanding what everything is. It also allows me to make small visual improvements in the product without even bothering one of the engineers, you know?
Yeah, my background is was a bit of a mix of design and software engineering and communication studies. Back in that day, it was much, much easier, right, to create a website, just code it up. At some point, I lost that a bit, like just front-end engineering just became way too complex, but always interested in just prototyping, like Framer Classic was my corner, right? Like, I love that, and just the interactivity of it and all. At Raycast, indeed, it is encouraged to just, you know, contribute where you can or you want and just go in. It's accessible to everyone.
Something I kind of look for in teams is just creating space to almost sand down the UI. Like I really like that analogy of like just always having space to go back and kind of like get rid of all the rough edges, everything that's like sticking out. And so that was kind of why I was asking about the technical background, because it was like feeling like that was the way that you all were.
But those things are so painful to do as like linear issues, screenshots, annotate. Wait for an engineer to pick it up, and then you still kind of need to review it. Maybe it's still slightly off. So I think, like I said, if it's a bit of CSS or if it's a bit of like Swift UI styling, like those things are pretty easy to pull off. Yeah. I think the biggest hurdle is getting set up, getting environment working, right? That's the hurdle. And like committing to the main branch and like making sure you don't mess it up is like always my worry like 2 years in.
I accidentally did that on the plane ride here. I like was just up late like making a bunch of changes in Cursor and I'm like, this looks good. Commit. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. And then if like a bug report comes in, like you start sweating and you're like, wait, did I introduce
is
this
that
bug?
Yeah, there's almost like a social cost, you know, like that back and forth. Like if the back and forth is happening in GitHub comments, it doesn't feel good as a designer to be like,
no,
I know you just responded to my feedback, but like this border radius, like come on, like it's like, you know, it's like off by 2 pixels.
Yeah, it's much faster. I think you cut timelines so much.
Yeah, and in the end, I think I've always believed this, but I think in the age of AI, it becomes more and more relevant and accessible. So I think it's the responsibility of the designer, right, to own everything visual and how it feels and how it works. So the fact that you can jump in and just fix a couple of things here and there, I mean, that's kind of the case for quite a bunch of years by now, but I think it gets more accessible now with AI to just be able to code up stuff. What is it, vibe coding, is that what you call it?
So here's the thing. The last few prototypes that I've made haven't been in Figma. Instead, I'm using Lovable. And honestly, it feels like magic to create real software without touching a single line of code. I mean, you could literally build whatever you can come up with and it's good. Like I'm genuinely proud of the prototypes that I'm making and developers can't believe how quickly I'm able to bring my ideas to life. So this is your wake up call. Don't stay stuck in rectangle land. I mean, I promise Lovable is way easier than you think and I'm having more fun designing right now than I have in a long time. So head to dive.club/lovable to start building today. That's L-O-V-A-B-L-E. All right, picture this. You're in Design Crit, you're getting a bunch of feedback from everyone on the call, and you're taking notes as fast as you can because that's what's going to fuel that next round of iteration. Sound familiar? Well, thankfully, those days are over. All you have to do is run granola in the background the next time you're talking with people on your team. That way you can relax a bit, be present in the conversation. Granola feels like a notepad, so you can still jot ideas down, so you don't have to be 100% reliant on AI or those creepy meeting bots. You can kind of think of it like Apple Notes, but it transcribes Crit for you. You can even have a Crit template to pull out specific action items or capture all of the questions you were asked. But I'm never starting a meeting without granola again, and I strongly believe that designers everywhere should be using it. They're offering 3 months free for you and anyone on your team. All you have to do is go to dive.club/granola to get the special offer. Okay, now on to the episode. Anything else in the collaboration space that we haven't talked about? Because I think it is interesting, specifically because you are this like remote team where everyone kind of has clear areas of ownership to an extent. So like, how much are you actually pairing on the same body of work, or how does like feedback culture happen even amongst the design team?
Yeah. So even though we don't have that many scheduled meetings, I quite often just jump in a huddle with someone, like, especially if it's like touching multiple platforms. So with Jordan, for example, we just sometimes huddle and we don't schedule that, right? It was like, okay, it's Thursday, I'm working on this thing, I'm maybe a bit stuck, or I don't know how iOS would solve this, like, let's jump in a huddle and let's figure it out together.
We've also done some design only projects, like myself and Roy worked on a bunch of, you know, AI vision work. Like, some of those things aren't like the now projects, but more looking at the future. So those were super fun to just bounce ideas off, and almost felt like you're back in like an agency or like a larger team, because we do work in quite small squads. So that's super fun as well, just to step back from production and almost just like dive deeper from a design perspective.
Yeah, sometimes it's fun to collaborate with another designer on a problem you've been thinking about and to get a unique perspective from them, you know. And sometimes it could be an engineer, because it's also really good to, I think, to discuss ideas early with engineering to make sure what you're designing is possible. Not feeling awkward and like kind of messaging someone, jumping on a huddle spontaneously, I think it's really important. And the fact we mentioned in the beginning that we don't have that many scheduled meetings, I think opens it up to spontaneous collaborations.
It's also, again, leaning into people's specialities, right? Like we said, like, if it's an illustration, like, I'm not going to attempt this. Like, what's the point? Or like, if you're working on a small icon, like, you might ping it to someone who's got a good eye for icon design and can tweak it and help you work those out. And those are, they're not planned, right? It's just you ping a Slack message, you get it fixed, and then you move on. So I think, yeah, understanding and getting used to just being able to leverage people, like, when you need them.
That's usually when I huddle Jordan, like, hey, can you look at my ugly icons?
What about the engineering piece? Like, Jordan, you said something interesting where maybe prod would be almost exactly like in tandem with design. It definitely doesn't feel waterfall-y, but maybe we could talk a little bit about, like, how do you all collaborate with engineers? What are some of the patterns or ways that you've had success so far?
I think the way we've worked a lot on iOS and sometimes on like Raycast Focus and stuff like that is like, you try and think about the smallest, roughest entry into the code base and you add that as soon as possible. That's deployed the next day and everyone's using it in internal. And then you just build upon that.
Cool.
And I've not that often had designs spec'd out to the full feature set, because you almost don't know what the feature set is that early on, especially if it's on a ray day or a couple of days after that. So I think that's where it's so in tandem and you're really heavily in huddles or on Slack messaging back and forth, discussing product and features and then trying to implement them as soon as possible. Because I think a lot of productivity is like, you have to feel it and use it to understand. So this whole like flat design is really hard. I almost have to pull up Figma Mirror if it's on iOS, or like even like convert it to Swift UI so I can feel it. I think it's that tangible stuff. And you can see Figma doing that with Figma Make, right? It's pivotal to making it feel right. So for me, as much as possible, getting it into the code base without doing too many polished designs early on.
This is maybe the most frequent type of feedback we get in like a Pixel Rumble, right? Like, it's, both looks cool. We don't know. Let's get it internal as fast as possible, and we can see how it feels. Like, we can see how it feels is so important, because Raycast is so, it's there and it's out of the way again, and that's the value.
It has to be snappy. It's like an extension of my fingertips.
Yeah. So we all know that we don't want to like have slow animations in there and a couple of other things, but sometimes you don't know what's going to work. Like, do we want it? Yeah, two options. Let's pick the one we feel the best about, and if it doesn't work, we fall back to the other one and try that.
Yeah, I think one example for focus was like, where does the bar go by default? Is it the bottom? Is it the top? Like,
where does it go by default?
Bottom.
Is it?
It's above the dock. They're like focus bar by default. I hope so. But that's the thing. We just like, we made a decision, and that's not when you add it. And then until you've used it and you don't know, is it going to interrupt the bottom of my window, the top of my window, notifications? Like, you're on a platform with so many other elements. It's not a website. It's not, you know, a contained app. So you have to figure those things out.
Yeah, and also things like, for example, sound is a good one with focus, right? Like, at some point we realize, like, it's not complete when it doesn't have this ding sound
the ding's
at the very end, right? Like, that completes it. Like, it's like the perfect sort of checkbox. Like, you're now out of your focus session. Go do whatever you want to do.
Well, I want to go deep on focus for a second. Who brought that to the table? Like, how did that originate? And who worked on it? Because there's a lot of different pieces. Like, it's so simple, and yet it kind of touches everything. But then you also have, like, these crazy animations. Like, what's the backstory?
It started with either Thomas or Peter had the idea, and then one rainy day, Peter messaged me. He was like, do you want to work on this idea for focus? Let's jump on a call. I built out like a super rough UI of like in Swift of just like how the form would work. We were like, let's pick a timer, a title, like really rough. And then we demoed that on the Monday, and then people were excited, and we decided just to push it forward.
And I think focus is an interesting one, because I think almost nobody initially felt like, this is an amazing product.
Oh my God, I thought like five people would use it.
Yeah.
It's like, I so use it every
unlike,
single day.
Yeah, but it's so unlike the stuff that we typically do, right? But, and you go, oh, this is so niche. It's like getting things done, you know, those sorts of like methodologies or principles. And you're like, oh, you try it and
too
you give
rigid.
Up.
Yeah, but that's an example of something that, you know, you ship it into internal. And because everyone at Raycast is a Raycast user, you get all of this immediate feedback throughout the company. Mm-hmm. And over a few weeks, you iterate on it, you make it better. And by the time it ships, it's, you know, you've already solved a lot of these paper cuts or small problems. And you have a feature that's actually really good, but you're kind of used to it. Whereas users are experiencing it for the very first time. So for them, very often, like we're very often surprised by the reaction we get.
It's a good example too of like the functionality at its core is so simple. Mm. There's a lot of the little subtle execution details, like hovering over to have the 3-second timer, the way that the success state operates. Like, I think the reason you probably feel comfortable getting something to code as fast as possible is because you all are empowered to kind of make it better and have all those like little micro improvements where, I don't know, maybe you feel this way, but like traditionally years ago, if I was a designer, I would be so worried to get something into code, because then it's like, oh my God, I have to go through someone every single time. It's going to be so much more work to change things. And so having that kind of fluid back and forth,
I think
is
it's
what
key
makes it
to the culture of Raycast, is that like nothing's locked in until, you know, we all agree that and it feels right. And I think we focus actually had more features to begin with that we pulled out.
Interesting.
And then we wait to see, it's like, okay, well, we don't need that. Let's pull it out. Let's hear feedback and see how people use it. And then we might bring it back. Like, we had a list of things that we were like, oh, these probably will get requested. And it's nice to validate when users use it. And they go, oh, yeah, they asked for that, that, and that. And then we know that we're ready then to almost bring that back to the table.
And yeah, maybe that's also interesting with the, I don't know if this is super common everywhere. I don't think so, actually. But like, all the projects obviously get a Slack channel, but the Slack channels are open, right? So everyone's encouraged to join that project and just provide feedback. And I would say almost everyone does this, right?
That's awesome.
Start using the feature, and then maybe it's not your thing, but you realize like, ah, notice this little like visual bug, or notice that it doesn't really work on my machine, right? Or doesn't, we all have different
browsers,
different languages set up, like older machines, older versions of macOS, like all these things just bubble up. And I think that's one of the reasons it's we get rid of the rough edges before it's out.
In a culture of feedback, though, a lot of times you get feedback that you just fundamentally disagree with as the designer. It's like there's a little bit more of an open-ended taste element there. Is that something that like you as the designer feel empowered to be like, you know, actually, like I'm kind of owning this project. I think we should do this way. Or how do you even walk that tightrope in a culture where there's open Slack channels, a bunch of people weighing in, everyone feels comfortable expressing their opinion? What's that like?
I think that the unique thing about Raycast is that everyone naturally uses the product. In many companies, you have to actively make the effort, you know, to use the product for testing. But at Raycast, everyone uses it for their day-to-day work and life. So everyone's feedback, I think, is valid because they're a user.
I think it comes down to intuition, right? As designers, we have that gut feeling. And I think it's like, how strong is that? Like, if I'm like, well, maybe you're right. Like, productivity is so, like, unique and everyone has a different perspective or, like, goal to achieve. So, like, just because I can't see their point of view doesn't mean it's right or wrong. But I think it's if it's, like, feedback towards something that's existing that you've added and you strongly believe in, then it's a different point of view and you maybe you want to back that up or sort of argue your case. But yeah, I think that's the benefit is that, like, yeah, if it feels right, it feels right, and you almost don't have to, like, argue it too much unless the other person strongly disagrees or you figure it out. But like Roy said, I think sometimes you have to just try it to see and believe it or then pull it back out.
I can't remember who was telling me. I'm like racking my brain trying to remember, but it was an async culture where the, like, format, the taxonomy of how you gave feedback was you had to put some kind of emoji in front of it. Like, there was a little emoji system that was indicative of how strongly do I care about this? Mm-hmm. Like, what is my conviction level and what I'm about to say? Because that so often gets lost and it kind of works both ways, you know? So I think that's a really interesting point that I'm almost thinking even for myself, like, how do I want to capture that sentiment, you know?
Yeah, you kind of want to attach a certain number or value to your feedback as well, right? Sometimes you can, I think this needs to be different, but if you rate that on a scale, somebody coined this, like, many, many years ago, a designer, I forgot who this was as well, but, like, sort of how many fucks do you give, right?
Yeah.
0 to 10? Like, yeah, I don't want to die on this hill. Like, I think it should be different, but, you know, it's a 2, or if it's an 8, then you better discuss that.
Yeah.
Save your energy for another day, right? There's going to be a bigger discussion that you may be more passionate about, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, it launches, and indeed, it wasn't a thing at all, right? Nobody notices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we're covering everything. So as a way to either, like, summarize or cover things that we haven't talked about, I have a question for each of you, which is, let's say, hypothetically, you have a disagreement with Pedro tomorrow. It is so extreme that you cannot stay at this company and you are leaving and you are going to go elsewhere. What is a element of the way that design works or the design culture at Raycast that you would want to make sure to take with you to the next company that you join?
I would say maybe the open culture of sharing and this low barrier to sharing work. I think it's really important and it's missing in so many organizations. I think just the focus we have, like the time we have to actually explore ideas.
I mean, you still have to fight for it, but I would really miss Ray Days. Like, everything else is very personal, right? Like, I cannot make the founders of the next company care about design as much as ours do, right? That needs to be there or not. Like, I cannot bring that. I think Pixel Rumble very much depends on that, whether that's the right people together in the room. But I think Ray Day, it just proved that it's like so many ideas were born there and were actually shipped. They were actually meaningful. That is, I think, if I would start a company, that would definitely be part of it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I can't disagree with the Ray Days, but I think also for me, something else would be just like diversifying the skill set of your designers. I've seen so many companies who like try to hire designers with similar molds, you know, that they focus on research, they focus on UX design. And I think the moat and the strength this team has over other teams that I've worked on is we all sort of cover these different areas and like quite deeply. I think, you know, I could pick a different designer to pick a different task. And I think if you're building a team or looking for a team, is finding a team with a diverse skill set. So you can kind of cover everything in-house.